Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back. This show is sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org, 1798part2.org, as well as republicreview.org. You are listening to the only show that actually provides you with constitutional solutions in restoring and getting the federal government back into compliance with the Constitution. And we're also leading to get the states back into compliance because the states are equally non-compliant. Some of that has to do with overreach from the federal courts. Actually, I believe today you will hear a conversation between myself and Keith Broders, and we will talk about the 17th Amendment and how the federal government is actually overreached regarding the counties and so forth. But again, that'll be in an interview coming up. The number to call in is 215-867-8255 or 215-TOP-TALK. As you know, I'm a humble person and I believe in groveling, so let me go ahead and grovel. If you want to be a part, if you are lacking blessings in your life, if you're looking for something a little bit more to accomplish, to put onto your resume or something like that, then there's probably no greater cause and there's probably nothing better you can probably put on your resume than something stating that you were responsible in helping the restoration of the Constitutional Republic. If you want to be a part of that, if you want to be a part of something that I would say is greater than just noble, I look at this as a righteous cause. And so with that, if you have a phone, you have a computer, and you have a little bit of time, you don't have to take a lot of time. You'd be surprised how effective you can be in just a short period of time doing a little research, making a couple of phone calls. Whatever you can contribute, you're more than welcome. We're happy to share the blessings with you. And so all you've got to do is send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. I've got a few people that have actually reached out, have connected with me. Some people have connected with me via Facebook. Others have connected with me via email. But one of these days I'll call them out. We'll actually have them on the phone or what have you. But until then, it's baby steps for them doing some basic research, such as Texas and so forth. So anyway, I would love to have, and we need as much help as we can, because bottom line, this constitutional compliance isn't just going to happen. The federal government, even if you point them out, oh, you know, you guys are not compliant. Oh, well, we're sorry about that. Let us get into compliance so that we can do what we're supposed to do, because they're not going to do that. And as a matter of fact, every day I look out my window, and as a matter of fact, every day I even scan the news, and there is no sign that the federal government is going to disband any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. That is why I ask humbly for your help, for your contributions, for your support. And if you want to contribute, by all means, you're more than welcome to do that. One of the ways you can contribute, besides just listening to the show and getting this word out to other people as this show grows, because that is one way. And actually, I would even suggest, and I'm recommending, even on my local show, for people to join the Constitution Club. I will, when we talk today, you'll be able to hear some of the stuff that you'll be able to contribute. Like I said, it doesn't take a lot of time. It just literally takes probably a cut and paste of a script and sending an email out to a whole bunch of addressees so that you can actually be heard to the state legislators who actually have the ability to make the changes necessary in restoring our constitutional republic, whether that's just a small step like the 17th Amendment or a grand step like Republic Review. Either way, you can help, because it's one thing for me to send out an email to a lot of people, and it's another thing for other leaders to do it, but it is totally a different thing when thousands of people are sending emails demanding that these state legislators step up and take back their suffrage in the Senate with the 17th Amendment, to take back the state by reforming towards a Republican form of government and getting away from democracies and allowing urban centers to basically dictate the entire business of the state. So by all means, I will curtail the groveling at this point, but by all means, you're more than welcome at this mantle of opportunity. Now, like I said, I did have a chance to interview and talk to Keith Borders earlier, and we talked about the 17th Amendment. And so we've got a couple of segments coming up right after this segment. So literally just in less than 8 minutes, we will be talking with Keith. And so what we want to do is talk about the Constitution Club and how he's going to use that organization. I think it's like over 4,000 members, but he wants to use that organization to start leveraging actual outcomes from the state legislators so that we can actually start stirring the pot in getting people to wake up and start becoming more constitutionally centric and as well as becoming constitutionally compliant. So here's a chance for you to be a part, again, of restoring our constitutional republic from all of the fundamental changes that violate the Constitution that people like Obama, all the way back to Andrew Jackson in instituting plans and policies and programs that have been violations of the Constitution. So here you go. You can become a part of history in preserving liberty. And with that, let me move forward. I want to give you some things to think about because I like doing that. When we get back into the last segment, hopefully I won't have anything more to rant about. And we can get into Samuel Adams' contribution and his comments at the Massachusetts ratification debate, as well as getting into some Pennsylvania ratification debates, because those are really, really good. But I want you to think about this. Every Democrat that points their finger, I learned a long time ago from my father, every time you point the finger, there's a few usually pointing right back at you because you're usually guilty of some things yourself. And so all of these Democrats that are demanding these investigations need to be equally called upon for investigations when they bring allegations forward, especially when you start putting it into context that there is a good possibility that some woman, man in their history might step forward, and I'm nudge, nudge, wink, wink, nod, nodding you, that maybe you might know some of these public servants that are Democrats, like Dianne Feinstein and so forth, and maybe she should be investigated by the FBI with her connection with China and so forth. They want to raise the bar, they have to step up and be equal in comparison into the standards that they're trying to set. Any public servant that has been caught lying, as far as I'm concerned, probably needs to be impeached. And that would go for, I think we need to put right in the very front of this, Blumenthal, because it's very clear he's been caught lying historically over one or many things, and we'll get into that. But he called out, basically pointing the finger at Kavanaugh, falsus in uno, falsus in omnibus. And so basically he was just taking a Latin phrase that says false in one thing, false in everything. Because if Kavanaugh had lied in one little thing, which they can't even prove anything like that, there's been no due process in this whole thing. But Blumenthal was literally guilty of what they call stealing honor, because when he was campaigning and in the early 2000s, he was literally lying that he came back from Vietnam. He never stepped a foot in Vietnam. He was a reservist. He didn't even serve during the Vietnam War, and so he definitely embellished his military record, didn't think he'd get caught. But as he states, if you lie in one thing, you lie in all things. Let me also point out that this Ocasio Cortez, the communist, has also alleged that Kavanaugh has lied. And so when somebody comes out with an allegation like that, then she should be called onto the rug and say, okay, precisely what were lies that you're calling a lie? And either she has to be forced to retract what she has said, because we can no longer let these people get away with these false assertions and lies. As a matter of fact, I'm going to bring you a quote tomorrow out of the Bible, but the Bible basically says anybody that comes with a false accusation, let them serve the sentence that would have fell upon the accused for whatever the crime was. So in other words, if somebody says that they raped me and they didn't, then they need to serve the time of the rapist. That way you will actually clean up these false accusations and this paradigm of lies that the, and actually I'll even call it the doctrine of Takia. I'm not necessarily a fan of harsh, but I do, you know, harsh rules and so forth, but I do believe that we have to get back to the rule of law. And so I'm okay with possibly instituting duels. I honestly think that maybe duels might be of order, but again, this the communists and the socialists that are running rampant, they need to be held accountable. This all comes from the doctrine of Takia, when it is okay to lie or do what is ever necessary to further your cause in getting that assertion or hurting somebody else. And so we're literally going to be coming into the hard break in just a couple seconds. Just to close this point, the schools have been lying to us, they've been revising our history, and they've been getting people to believe a false narrative. We have to stop. We have to get back to the truth. We can no longer allow erasing our history, just like tearing down monuments and everything else. If this country is going to survive, it will have to survive based on the truths of its history, not based on the manufactured lies and the fabrications of historical revisionists trying to grind an agenda in destroying our constitutional republic. So with that, I will be right back after word from our sponsors, and we're going to actually have Keith Broders on talking about the 17th Amendment. So please stay tuned. You may want to be involved in this. So again, I'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And welcome to the program, Keith Broders. We have the founder of the Constitution Club, as I just said, Keith Broders, with us today. And there's so many different things we can talk about, but one of those things that I think that we can actually make political hay and start affecting the political landscape of the republic would be the 17th Amendment. Now, there's other issues that you've brought up, like the concept of testing certifications. I mean, I've written about that in my book as well. We could talk about that. I will let you pick the subject du jour. What is it do you want to talk about?
Well, first off, I'd like to talk about the Constitutional Convention. In 1787, there was a discussion about representation. This was the hottest debate going on how the representation in the national legislature should be established. Now, Edmund Randolph was the governor of the state of Virginia. He wanted a bicameral legislature, but he wanted both houses to be based on proportionate populations. In other words, he thought that the large states should have a lot more representation than the small states. Well, this idea was very readily acceptable to the six large states. But the seven relatively small states, states with populations of under 250,000, they thought this was a bad idea. Rather than having proportional representation, they wanted equal representation, which means that every one of the states would have one representative. This was exactly the way it was during the Oral Confederation. This would give the advantage to the small states. Well, this proposal was totally unacceptable. I think his name was William Patterson, who came up with what was known as the New Jersey Plan. And so you had these two competing factions, the large states versus the small states. Should we have equal representation? Should we have proportional representation? And Roger Sherman from Connecticut came to the rescue with what became known as the Connecticut Compromise. And what he suggested was that we basically give the large states the ability to have proportional representation in the House of Representatives, and we would give the small states the opportunity to have equal representation in the Senate. That way, there would be a check and a balance. That way, the large states could not dominate the small states, and the small states could not dominate the large states. This was a great compromise, and this was the foundation of our Republican form of government. And so the Founding Fathers, they wanted to the states were very strict guardians of their liberty, and they did not want to give this new founded government an ability to strip them of their equal representation. And so they, in the Article 5 amendment process, they said there's two things that the government could not do. They could not pass amendments that would prevent the importation of slaves until the year 1808, and they would not have any amendment that would deprive the states of their equal representation.
Yep.
And so this was made in the Constitution under Article 5. And so when the progressives, who wanted to have proportional representation, they decided that we would like to get an amendment in here that would cause for the election of senators to be direct. Well, in order for that to happen, they had to go to the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives, get a two-thirds vote in favor of this proposed amendment. But at the same time, the thing that they apparently escaped their attention was the fact that there was an amendment, or excuse me, there was an article in the Constitution that prohibited them from violating the rights of the states to be equally represented in the Senate. And that is in the Article 5. And so today, as it turns out, there were over 48 states at the time when the amendment was first proposed. They had 36 ratifications right off the bat. And so the amendment was theoretically passed, and yet there were a lot of irregularities, which means that it was probably fraudulently ratified. There's a lot of evidence to support that. But anyway, so the amendment is passed. But when it was passed, there were seven states. Actually, initially, there were eight states. There were two states that voted against it, Utah and Delaware. And there were six states that just refused to deal with it, period, at all. And so Delaware, in the year 1913, voted against the ratification of the 17th Amendment. And then in the year 2010, Delaware, thanks to probably Joe Biden, they decided, oh, well, let's go ahead and go along with this. Let's go ahead and ratify this amendment. So they changed their vote from a negative vote to an affirmative vote. And this created a judicial precedence, which basically means that any state that voted for or against the amendment could change their vote as time went by. And so today, we have seven states that have not given their consent. And by the conditions mandated in Article 5, no state can be denied their equal representation in the Senate without their consent. Well, these seven states that exist today have not given their consent. Therefore, they cannot lose their equal suffrage in the Senate. Therefore, it's my position that these states have every right to discontinue following the 17th Amendment. The 17th Amendment is only applies to those states that have ratified the amendment and have given their consent to lose their suffrage. And so this is basically my premise, that the states that have not given their consent can start electing their own senators from their state legislatures.
Right. And so let me just throw this in here. There are a lot of people, or I should say a lot of people, but this premise that you have has been supported and it's been thrown out there. The bottom line, folks, is that with Article 5, this Amendment Protection Clause at the very end of it, and with the 17th Amendment, what we have is we have a conflict within the Constitution, because the authors that wrote the 17th Amendment that Keith has not provided or presented to us at this point, and if you go and do the research in the records, or it's the records of Congress and the Senate, you will not find any mention of the Article 5 Protection Clause in the 17th Amendment. In other words, they were only changing Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution, and they didn't even know that that part even existed, and they, not knowing, created a conflict. Therefore, as Keith's premise and a few others, I know Douglas Gibbs and others have kind of talked about this, but I believe that there's a lot of us that are willing to get behind this and support this. And therefore, we do have, I believe, standing and precedence to allow those seven states, as Keith was just saying, and those seven states are what again, Keith?
Well, I don't have a list here in front of me.
I've got it then. It's Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi, South Carolina, Virginia, and Utah. Those are the seven states that can literally reject the general election of senators, and the state legislators can go back to appointing their own senators to represent them so that they can re-obtain their equal suffrage within the Senate.
And what this does is it reestablishes the Great Compromise of 1787, where you have one house with equal representation and one house with proportional representation. This is the check and the balance. And this check and balance has also been destroyed in the states. Most all of the states today have proportional representation in their state assemblies and proportional representation in their state senates. And therefore, the majority basically has the ability to dominate and control the minority and deprive them of their rights.
Yes, and so the more important part of this, to me, is the constituent. The constituents that the Senate represents are the state legislators per the Constitution. By changing them, and as I've read this through the Virginia ratifications, Madison clearly stated that the way they did the Senate and the House of Representatives, the government was not consolidated. But by making the government all proportional and representative of the people and not representative of the states, literally consolidates everything into the hands of the people, which literally moves us closer to a democracy and away from the Republican form of government that the framers intended on setting up. And so we can actually save our republic by getting these seven states to start asserting that. And we've got about a minute and a half left, Keith, but I think there's merit in talking about a parallel action or getting somebody else to take a different approach of getting other states to join Delaware in rescinding their original position and moving forward with rescinding the 17th Amendment altogether. What do you say?
Well, I absolutely agree. I think that this is one of the most important things that we can do. If the states are going to be the guardian of the rights of the people, then the states need to have a voice at the bargaining table. And they have been, the states in the first place created the national government. It was not the people who wrote the Constitution, it was the representatives of the states.
Right.
Representatives of the states have now been kicked out, are kicked off the bargaining table. And this is totally contrary to the maintenance of a Republican form of government.
Correct. And so one of the things that as I've pointed out before, these constituents, the states or the state legislators being one set of constituents and the people being another set of constituents, one of the things that I think is really important is that as this time test, or as we've traveled through time since this facade of ratifying the 17th Amendment has occurred, one of the things that we've realized is that this was one of the biggest mistakes that this republic has made. There have been several states that have taken positions. So we got 10 seconds left. So what I'd like to do is hold you on for the next segment, and then we'll get into some of these states that I believe would be champions for literally rescinding their ratification and going towards rejecting this 17th Amendment and literally going down that path. So folks, please stay tuned. This is really, really important stuff and good stuff. See, it's not always just about Republic Review. It is about fixing our constitutional republic. So we'll be right back after word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VONTRACYDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue. And so as we were just talking about, and as I was mentioning just by going into the break, as we start trying to, I don't want to use the word pummel, but we definitely want to go after these seven states that can literally stop holding general elections because there is this conflict and because they did not give their consent, as Keith was articulating, they can literally stop having general elections and going back to state legislators appointing their senators. And therefore, on the other hand, or in a separate effort, because there would be one body of effort in getting these seven states to assert their authority from not surrendering their consent and taking back their representation in the Senate, there would be a separate effort of trying to appeal to some very specific states that I believe would be a good candidate for actually rescinding their ratification. So one of those is Wyoming. I think Wyoming would be a great candidate in rejecting or rescinding the ratification and then rejecting the 17th Amendment. What do you think, Keith?
Well, I think that Wyoming would be a great choice. I think another very red state would be Idaho, and I think North and South Dakota and Kansas.
Uh-huh.
would be other states that would be very receptive to this idea.
Yes, yes.
I think that if you take a look at the number of state legislatures, there's 50 state legislatures, and right now 30 of the 50 are basically controlled by the conservative element.
Yes.
And frankly, a lot of the states' legislatures that are controlled by the Democrats are controlled by the Democrats because the state senates of those metropolitan cities of New York and Chicago and Los Angeles dominate the state legislature. So if we return the counties to a position of rightful authority, there would be even more red states than there are now.
Right. Correct. That would be going down the path of enforcing the guarantee clause, where the states, the landscape of the states would then be representative based on counties and not via that, well, you said it the other day, it's Sims and Reynolds v. Sims.
Reynolds v. Sims.
Right.
The original Supreme Court case was Baker and Carr, I believe, in Alabama. That started in 1963, which led to the Reynolds versus Sims case. And in that case, basically, Earl Warren came to the conclusion that we really didn't need to have equal representation in one house and proportional representation in the other. He decided that we needed proportional representation in both houses, which means we needed to eliminate the opportunity for the rights of the individual to be protected against the tyranny of the majority. And now we have a uniparty situation in California because the urban counties control both houses, and there is no check, there is no balance, and the rights of the minority are completely ignored.
Right. And so really the two things that stand out to me regarding that decision is, one, that it was well outside their jurisdiction. First off, this is a political position of the Constitution, and the Supreme Court has no jurisdiction over political matters. That is actually left to Congress. Congress is the arbiter over the political matters of the Constitution, because the guarantee clause has been constantly put to the side whenever it's come up to the court. They have refused to hear any cases because of its political nature. And the second thing is that what Warren literally was stating and articulating was a direct violation to what was stated during the ratification debates as far as the county representations and the role the counties had within the states, because Madison clearly articulated, based on the layout of the Republican form of government, that the counties is where these state legislators and these senators would have to be reliant upon their good name, because it wasn't based on cities, it was based on counties.
And today we have politically gerrymandered, artificial, fictitious boundaries that are established by the majority parties that benefit the political parties, but not we the people.
Right.
And so one of the things that I'm proposing also is that in the counties, that the counties be apportioned representation.
Uh-huh.
For example, if you look at throughout the entire country, the average state has a state assemblyman representing 50,000 people. That's the average.
Right.
Well, that means that what I would suggest then is that every county would be apportioned one representative for every 50,000 people they had. So if a county had 100,000 residents or 100,000 people living there, that they would be entitled to two representatives in the state assembly.
And if you wanted to see lawyers really go into a seizure, a fit, because based on the premise of Warren and based on this precept of being able to just move boundaries, then the whole context of counties and having a county seat is moot. So why don't we just shut down the seats of government and let the state basically control everything, instead of having all of these county courts and everything else? We don't need this many judges. Let's unemploy a lot of lawyers. Now, there's a lot of nice things that might come from that, but it is very important, and the framers were very clear that you needed to be able to travel a reasonable distance for your representation, and that was why we had counties, and that's why states were broken up, because it was unfathomable that you would have to go to the state courthouse or to the state capitol to cast your vote or to have your day in court and so forth. And that's why each state was broken up into a republic, into sub-elements, which we call counties.
Now, the one thing that I wanted to mention also is the fact that there's two ways to participate in an election. The election that we have for our congressman is a direct election. The people are participating in a direct election.
Yep.
That's what a democracy is, when the people participate directly. When the people do not participate directly, it's an indirect election. And in an indirect election, the people's representatives vote in their behalf.
Right.
And that's what's happened when we have an election for president. We, the people, do not elect the president on the basis of a popular vote. What we do is we participate in what they call the Electoral College, which basically provides an opportunity for the representatives of the people to vote for and on behalf of the people. And so here's a concept that I think is rather unique, and I don't think I've ever heard anyone else talk about this. And that is that in the case of California state senators or senators from other states, I personally believe that these elections should not be direct elections. Again, that's a democratic model. Our Constitution says that we need to have a republican form of government, and therefore we need to employ a indirect election whenever possible. So when we elect a senator, I think what should happen is, rather than allowing investors from other states to come in and spend money to get a senator elected to represent their corporate best interests, what I would like to see happen is I would like to see the senators from the counties be chosen by the county board of supervisors. The county commissioners have that position appointed by your local, your county commissioners.
Correct, because those people are your representatives at the county level. Correct.
And because of that, by having them make that choice for us, we are employing a republican form of government.
Yes.
In fact, I think that would be appropriate. Now, what that would do is it would take a lot of the money and the politics out of the situation.
Correct. Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, if you didn't know, I know that there's been a lot of money pouring into Georgia. Just like last spring, there was a special election in Georgia because there was a vacant representative seat, and there were $30 million poured into that district to try to unseat the Republican. I forget her name. I think Hatch or something like that. Hardy, maybe it was Hardy, but long story short, the Democrats from New York, California, and so forth have been trying to influence these local elections, and they're just like what I'm trying to do in Wyoming. And if we would have had more help and more assistance, we would have gotten more seats, because this is what the states, and this is the way the system allows us to do this, to influence these elections. I'm not a fan of it, but because we can do it, we might as well do it now before we even lose our ability to take back our republic. We got about a minute and a half, Keith. Anything else you wanted to bring up regarding the 17th Amendment?
This idea about the direct election versus indirect elections, what if we were to indirectly elect our governor? What if our governor would be elected by our state senators?
Well, you could create an electoral college if you got rid of legislative districts and went back to the counties. Then those counties would represent, you know, whatever that electoral college would be for the governor. You could create a very similar system.
What we need to do, I feel, is we've got to take the money out of politics. We've got to take the ability of the financial elite to control our destiny and the legislative decisions that are made.
And you would think that the Democrats would love that, but they hate that, because if you look at the financial elite people, all of the billionaires, as I say on my show, go look at Soros's foundations, Bill Gates, all of the elite billionaires, Oprah Winfrey, they all contribute to the Soros foundation of open borders. So you're right. We absolutely need to get them out of influencing our elections. I agree completely. Anyway, we've got about 10 seconds left. I'd like to thank you for coming on to the show, and we definitely want to have you back on to talk about the certifications and or testing.
Thank you very much.
So, folks, as you can tell, we're at that hard break. We will have Keith back on, and you will not want to miss that discussion when we talk about why is it that we have a license for our dogs, but we don't have licenses for our politicians. I don't know if a dog's bark is worse than a politician's bite or backwards. Anyway, we'll be right back after word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And okay, as I was talking to Keith, it came to me, it was Handel. It was the Congressman Handel who won that election with over $30 million from the Democrats to try to buy that congressional seat. And the reason I brought that up is because currently there are millions and millions of dollars that are going into Georgia to try to support, and they won't even disclose where all this money's coming from. I'll just say the communist opponent in the race, which is Stacey Adams. She is the Democrat. But bottom line, if you are talking about a Democrat and you point to their political platform, then you can easily you can't refute the fact that they are communists because their platform is communist. It's just that simple. Anyway, the states that we didn't identify that would give us literally 14 states in addition to the 7 states that had already failed to ratify or rejected the 17th Amendment would be Wyoming, Utah, South Dakota, North Dakota, Idaho, Kansas, as well as Nebraska, Tennessee, Missouri, Indiana, Oklahoma, Alabama, Texas, and Ohio. Those states would probably very easily be able to undo their ratification because of their preponderance of Republican control in their state legislators. That being said, I think it's very, very important that we really make a concerted effort at the very beginning of this year to get these first 7 states to start literally undoing the general election process and going back to appointing. And I believe these 14 states will quickly follow suit in going, if that's all we've got to do, then absolutely, because why not? Then you will actually see the 17th Amendment become unratified because it will be rescinded. And that's just due to the fact that good old Delaware didn't realize that while it was trying to make this noble intent, you know, Biden, he's not the brightest bulb on the tree. And so he wanted to, you know, show off that, yeah, we're going to, you know, sign up for this communist change in this Republican government. And that way we will rescind our rejection and ratify. But by allowing that, that creates, it's not a judicial precedence. I want to be clear on that as well. It creates a constitutional precedence. There is no such thing as a judicial precedence within the amendment process. But it does create a constitutional precedence that the government is allowing states to make changes to their final determination on our status or disposition on an amendment. Therefore, I believe that it's more than incumbent upon the good people of those states that rejected or did not ratify and the states that no longer want to. This is the kind of constitutional crisis that I think the Republic really needs to start boiling up to really show that we are rejecting communism. We are rejecting the centralization of unconstitutional powers by a federal government that has failed to follow the Article 5 process. And this will literally put wind in the sails with Republic review as well. So all of that being said, let me dive into Samuel Adams' comments at the Massachusetts ratification debates. And as I do that, and as I go into the Pennsylvania ratification debates as well today, let me ask you this one question. Are the words that I am reading from these founding documents the words of deceit and lies? Or are the words that we have been taught from our education system and our progressive college professors and lawyers, politicians, and so forth, are they lying to us and are they deceiving us? I will let you be the answer, or I'll let you be the judge of that in doing your own due diligence. So Samuel Adams clearly stated, after John Hancock made these recommendations, he threw those recommendations out there. They called him a proposition. He had these lists of amendments that he was recommending. Samuel Adams stated, "Your Excellency's first proposition is that it will be explicitly declared that all powers not expressly delegated to Congress are reserved to the several states to be by them exercised. This appears to my mind to be a summary of a Bill of Rights which gentlemen are anxious to obtain. It removes a doubt which many have entertained respecting the matter and gives assurance that if any law be made by the federal government shall be extended beyond the power granted by the proposed Constitution, the inconsistent with the Constitution of this state, it will be an error and adjudged by the courts of law to be void. It is consonant with the second article in the present Confederation that each state retains its sovereignty, freedom, and independence, and every power, jurisdiction, and right which is not by this Confederation expressly delegated to the United States in Congress assembled. I have long considered the watchfulness of the people over the conduct of their rulers the strongest guard against the encroachments of power, and I hope the people of this country will always be thus watchful." Very powerful stuff, but he clearly is stating, just like Virginia and the rest of the states, clearly stated that if it is not delegated, it is unconstitutional and should be null and void. But the problem is that the federal government and the court system lied to us. And over the years, they've continued to hoodwink and nod and say, yeah, we can do this. The whole time, they've been usurping powers and stealing the powers from the states. Now, getting into the Pennsylvania ratification debates, this is Mr. Wilson. And he says, "Sir, I think there is another subject with regard to which the Constitution deserves approbation. I mean the accuracy with which the line is drawn between the powers of the general government and those of the particular state governments. We have heard some general observations in this subject from the gentlemen who conduct the opposition. They have asserted that these powers are unlimited and undefined. These words are as easily pronounced as limited and defined. they have already been answered by my honorable colleague, Mr. McKean. Therefore, I shall not enter into an explanation, but it is pretended that the line is drawn with mathematical precision. The inaccuracy of language must, to a certain degree, prevent the accomplishment of such a desire. Whoever views the matter in a true light will see that the powers are as minutely enumerated and defined as was possible, and will also discover that the general clause against which so many exceptions is taken is nothing more than what is necessary to render effectual the particular powers that are granted. And so here we literally see the exact same conversations that were occurring in Virginia, Massachusetts, and all the other states where the federal government is limited and defined. Why are these ratification debates so important? And why did I bring up reading what was discussed when they were discussing the 17th Amendment with Keith? The reason, my friends, is because as it is being discussed in the passing of a law, when you're going through a contract and you're saying, we're going to make this particular change and this is why we're changing it, you have to understand the context of the justifications, what they're changing, why they're changing it, so that down the road you can look back and go, oh, you know what? They never intended to deny any state of its suffrage. What they were trying to do was they were just trying to change that Section 2 of Article 1, just the process. So they were only changing the process. Therefore, if a state rejected that process, then they could retain the process that they followed in the first instance of the Constitution. If that doesn't make sense, what we're talking about is literally a conflict between a process of how senators are appointed. If you reject it, you do not have to follow it, because the Constitution has a protection clause that says no state can be denied its equal suffrage in the Senate. To be clear, if you understand what suffrage is and the state suffrage is not the suffrage of the people, it is the suffrage of the state. Therefore, this cannot be construed as people have tried to construe. As long as the people of the state vote for that, then no, that's not the same thing. When people vote for a senator, the state no longer has suffrage. This is the suffrage of the constituent of the people. They clearly delineated, as Keith and as I have several times on this show pointed out, that there are two constituents in the eyes of the federal government. The states being one constituent as a sovereign, and the people being another constituent as a sovereign, which is why the Congress was divided into two houses, one house for the people, the other house for the states. They were both to have equal, so the Senate was supposed to have equal suffrage, and the House was supposed to have proportional suffrage for the people. And so just because people say, oh, well, just because the people are electing senators doesn't mean that the states aren't having. No, it's a huge difference, because the old adage is, he who pays the piper calls the tune. In other words, he who is responsible for the election or the seating of that person actually has leverage with those votes of those senators. And the people are not the same as the states. And to be clear with that, we will talk more about it tomorrow and in the upcoming series of Reclaiming the Republic in these upcoming shows. So I'll be back tomorrow. God bless, and we'll see you tomorrow. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.